Today on the show, hidden things, hidden places, and why we humans feel compelled to look for them even if they're not on any map.
I love that you've mentioned that this is all about hidden spaces or hidden things, hidden spaces, hidden places, because it's funny. We don't realize how much is hidden in our everyday.
This is Andres Russo.
And I am a geoscientist specializing in geothermal systems.
Andres's work is about forces deep below the Earth, heat, lava, rock, and how they influence the world above.
I mean, you're in D.C., so one of my favorite things to do is just walk around this Washington, D.C., and look at all of the different rocks that make the buildings that make that city.
Yeah.
You have this entire geologic history right in front of you.
But not all geologic forces are hidden in plain sight. And years ago, Andres heard a story about a force that wasn't only hidden, but its very existence seemed impossible.
It all starts with this legend.
Here's Andres on the TED stage.
As a boy in Lima, my grandfather told me a legend of the Spanish conquest of Peru. Pizarro and his conquistadors had grown rich, and tales of their conquest and glory had reached Spain and was bringing new waves of Spaniards hungry for gold. They would go into towns and ask the Inca, "Where's another civilization we could conquer? Where's more gold?" And the Inca, out of vengeance, told them, "Go to the Amazon. You'll find all the gold you want there. In fact, there is a city called Paititi, El Dorado in Spanish, made entirely of gold." The Spanish set off into the jungle, but the few that return come back with stories. Stories of powerful shamans, of warriors with poisoned arrows, of trees so tall they blotted out the sun, spiders that ate birds, snakes that swallowed men whole, and a river that boiled. All this became a childhood memory, and years passed. I'm working on my PhD at SMU, trying to understand Peru's geothermal energy potential, when I remember this legend, and I began asking that question: could the boiling river exist? I asked colleagues from universities, the government, oil, gas, and mining companies, and the answer was, well, a unanimous no. And this makes sense. You see, boiling rivers do exist in the world, but they're generally associated with volcanoes. And we don't have volcanoes in the Amazon, nor in most of Peru, so it follows. We should not expect to see a boiling river. Telling this same story at a family dinner, my aunt tells me, "But no, Andres, I've been there." Then my uncle jumps in. No, Andres, she's not kidding.
And then he starts describing a, you know, something as wide as a river flowing at a powerful flow rate, as wide as a two-lane road, about, you know, 190 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, that got my attention as far as way too many details to be made up.
So at that point, did you say, "I have got to go there. I've got to find this place"?
Yeah, absolutely. First thing I did was grab my iPhone and start looking for everything I could online. But what was bizarre is I couldn't find anything.
There was nothing.
No, nothing.
Okay, one thing here. If it existed, the river would be hot enough to kill anything that falls into it. And that kind of heat doesn't happen without a volcano. And the nearest volcano was hundreds of miles away. So Andres says to his aunt, "If this river is for real, can you show it to me?"
So the next day, she gave me the telephone number and the email of her contacts. She used to do indigenous rights work and had made friends with the wife of this powerful shaman who guards over the boiling river. And she goes, "Look, if you really want to see this thing, we need to go into the jungle, and I will personally lead you out there."
So from Lima, Peru, they got on a plane.
From Lima, there's a one-hour flight to Pucallpa.
It's a city in the Amazon. And from there?
It was about 2 hours driving. Most of it was on a dirt road. Then about 30 minutes by Peque Peque. Peque Peque is a motorized canoe.
Then finally, a two-hour walk through the jungle.
The shaman's apprentice was leading us, and my aunt and I were pretty tired. When suddenly, we're quiet. You can just hear heavy breathing. But I start to hear like a distant roar, like a rumble, a surge. I look over to the shaman's apprentice and I ask him, "Hey man, like what is that?" And he looks at me and he says, it's the river. And he just kind of laughs and goes, "Go." So I bolt down the path and I end up standing on this small cliff off the river. So imagine this beautiful turquoise blue water, flanked on either side by these ivory-colored stones, and then 60-foot walls of green, these huge, massive trees just flanking either side. And it's flowing hot, most of it hot enough to kill you, for just under 4 miles. So it's a huge amount of water.
The river flowed hot and fast. I followed it upriver and was led by actually the shaman's apprentice to the most sacred site on the river. And this is what's bizarre. It starts off as a cold stream. And here, at this site, is the home of the Yakumama, mother of the waters, a giant serpent spirit who births hot and cold water. And here, we find a hot spring mixing with cold stream water underneath her protective motherly jaws, and thus bringing their legends to life. How can a boiling river exist like this? I've asked geothermal experts and volcanologists for years, and I'm still unable to find another non-volcanic geothermal system of this magnitude. There's still more research to be done, but from what the data is telling us now, it looks to be the result of a large hydrothermal system. The deeper you go into the Earth, the hotter it gets. We refer to this as the geothermal gradient. The waters could be coming as far away as glaciers in the Andes, then seeping down deep into the earth and coming out to form the boiling river after getting heated up from that geothermal gradient. Now, what was amazing is that the locals had always known about this place, and that I was by no means the first outsider to see it. It was just part of their everyday life. They drink its water. They take in its vapor. They cook with it, clean with it, even make their medicines with it. It's unique. It's special on a global scale.
I mean, here's the thing, like, we think of our world as totally mapped and discovered, and this wasn't. This was, I mean, people knew about it, but it was totally hidden, basically, from the world.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
So it's curious, because even the shaman, the main shaman there, he even says, there was never a community in the distant past, is what he says, at the Boiling River area, because it was seen as a place of spirits.
Hmm.
So very few people would want to go there out of fear for the spirits.
Huh.
But then the final thing is, the jungle is still remote, and yeah, I am the first scientist to be given the shaman's blessing to study their site and help them bring it to the world.
Do you ever have like a moment where you worry that by bringing it out of hiding that, you know, other people will discover it and then it might like ruin it?
So bringing it to the world like this is a little nerve-wracking, because I love this place. It's one of the most beautiful spots I've ever seen, especially at night. You know, imagine more stars than you can possibly imagine fit into the night sky, and you're laying on a rock that's naturally warm, so you are just blanketed by these clouds of warm vapor. So you're in this natural sauna, hearing every animal in the jungle just calling out and singing. It feels like you're in a dream, and the threat of it getting touristy really, really saddens me. But at the same token, these people want to make a living. So are we going to let the easiest way to make money in the area be to truly exploit the jungle and not leave a single tree standing? Or are we going to try to empower these local people to set up their tourism so that they can really dictate their own destiny?
My goal is to ensure that whoever controls this land understands the Boiling River's uniqueness and significance. And in this age, where everything seems mapped, measured, and studied, in this age of information, I remind you all, there remains so much to explore. So go out, be curious, because we do live in a world where shamans still sing to the spirits of the jungle, where rivers do boil, and where legends do come to life. Thank you very much.
Andres Russo is a geophysicist. He's finishing his PhD at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. His new book about this is called The Boiling River: Adventure and Discovery in the Amazon. And you can see his entire talk at TED.com. Oh! Hey, thanks for listening to our show this week, all about our hidden world. If you want to find out more about who's on it, go to ted.npr.org. You can see hundreds more TED Talks at ted.com. Our production staff at NPR includes Jeff Rogers, Brent Bachman, Megan Kane, Neva Grant, Sanaz Meshkinpour, and Kelly Prime, with help from Daniel Shukin. Our intern is Maria Paz Gutierrez. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Darren Triff, and Janet Lee. If you want to let us know what you think about the show, you can write us at tedradiohour@npr.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. It's @tedradiohour. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading right here on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.